to Native America Calling. From Studio 869 in Isleta Pueblo, I'm Tara Gatewood. Choctaw Nation leaders say Congress should stay out of their enrollment decisions. It's the latest chapter in the battle over recognizing Choctaw freedmen as citizens. The descendants of slaves, once owned by Choctaw members, insist they're entitled to enrollment. The tribe signed a treaty in 1866 that included freedmen as citizens, but the tribe later excluded them. Some congressional leaders are attempting to pass legislation to force the issue. We'll jump into this discussion right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The state of Alaska is taking legal action to seize part of a Native allotment for a road project. The Native allotment holder is fighting back. KYUK's Greg Kim has more.
For over 20 years, the Alaska Department of Transportation has been working on the Tundra Ridge Road Project in Bethel. It wants to build a road in the 6,000-person Alaskan town that would improve access to neighborhoods for emergency vehicles. But the Polk family in Bethel stands in the state's way. The Polks own the land where the state's proposed road would pass through. The state has made offers to buy the land several times, but the Polks said the offers have been too low. The state says the offer comes from an independent appraiser who determines the fair market value. Unable to reach an agreement, the state filed action to take the land through eminent domain. Eminent domain is a process by which the government can condemn private land for public use. Warren Polk, one of the Native allotment holders, describes eminent domain a different way.
It's stealing. And that's what it is. You can call it eminent domain you want, but it's stealing the land from the landowners.
If the state condemns a property through eminent domain, the Polks would be compensated by the amount that the state most recently offered and the Polks said was too low. On March 9th, the city council in Bethel passed a resolution opposing the state's plan to take the Polks' land by eminent domain. Bethel City Manager Pete Williams says there's an alternate route for the road that wouldn't require seizing a Native allotment. Plus, he says the alternate route would better suit the city's needs.
This road that's currently proposed is going to cause a lot of problems.
Williams says the state's proposed route would funnel too many vehicles into a residential neighborhood that isn't built to handle that much traffic. And this is not the first time that the city has given the state this warning. It passed resolutions in 2016 and 2018 advising them to go with the longer alternate route. The state says the alternate route would cause more damage to wetlands and cost almost $6 million more than a route through the Polks' property. The Polks are fighting the state's claim for eminent domain in court. Their attorneys argue that the state can achieve its objectives without taking the Polks' property. They also say the state is not taking the minimum amount of land necessary and that it is not offering just compensation. The next court hearing for the state of Alaska versus the Polks has not yet been scheduled. In Bethel, I'm Greg Kim.
New Mexico Congresswoman Deb Haaland delivered her farewell speech on the House floor Tuesday ahead of her swearing in as Secretary of the Interior. Haaland thanked her colleagues, talked about her personal struggles in life as a way she connects with people, and touched on being a Native woman in Congress.
Growing up, Native women rarely held federal leadership positions, and now little girls everywhere will know that they can run for Congress and win, and that this country holds promise for everyone. In fact, it's the unique experiences and struggles that make good leaders.
Haaland highlighted some of her work over the last 2 years, including bipartisan bills on missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. She thanked her supporters, expressing she thought she'd have more time in Congress, but is now called to serve in a different way. The Strong Hearts Native Helpline is launching text service beginning next week. The helpline serves those impacted by domestic, dating, and sexual violence. The text advocacy is intended to help people who are hearing impaired or unable to vocalize a call for support. The helpline is 1-844-7-NATIVE. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Now. National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. For Native Americans affected by domestic violence, the Strong Hearts Native Helpline offers peer-to-peer support and resources. It's safe, confidential, and toll-free at 844-7-NATIVE. Program support by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center. Support by the Sanosky Chambers Law Firm, championing tribal sovereignty and defending Native American rights since 1976, with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, joining you from my homelands, Oshirwa'atu'i, and the Choctaw Freedmen say a promise made to them more than a century ago and a half is not being fulfilled. Some members of Congress agree and are pushing to force tribal leaders to accept the freedmen as citizens. But so far, Choctaw leaders are holding firm and say Congress has no control over tribal enrollment decisions. And the dispute goes back to just after the Civil War. Choctaw leaders signed a treaty with the United States agreeing to abandon slavery and to enroll the former slaves with blood ties to the Choctaw Nation. Eventually, Choctaw leaders denied freedmen citizenship more than a century later. The tribe changed their constitution, formally excluding the freedmen. And that's not the end of the dispute. Though the recent decision by the Cherokee Nation to allow the freedmen as citizens offers the possibility of a new momentum for change. And some members of Congress have made efforts to insert language into federal legislation that punishes the tribe for not enrolling freedmen. Choctaw Nation Chief Gary Batten responded with a letter to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi saying the efforts are an affront to sovereignty. We invited Chief Batten to be a guest on the show today. He declined because of a scheduling conflict, but in the letter to Speaker Pelosi, he said the freedmen issue is a problem caused by the United States, not the Choctaw Nation. And he added Congress is abusing its power to attempt to force Choctaw Nation to fix America's systemic racism rooted in slavery. And today we'll hear from a Choctaw freedmen descendant who says the tribe's actions come down to racism. And what do you think about this issue? Phone lines are open. The number to join us is 1-800-996-2848. And right now, joining us from Lenoir City, Tennessee, is Shelby Ward. She is a co-founder of the Oklahoma Freedmen Collective and the Tennessee representative for the descendants of freedmen of the Five Civilized Tribes Association. And she is a Choctaw freedman. Welcome to Native America Calling, Shelby.
Thank you, Tara, for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Well, Shelby, I'd like you to share your own story. And, you know, I shared a little bit of where we got to today and some of the things that are being put on the table. But definitely want to start off with your own family history. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. So first off, I want to say an introduction and I can mention more about my family. So with that, Hale To, Saha Chief, I got Shelby Ward, Hachia Fama, Lee Kat, Na Yakpa Yakoki. So hi, my name is Shelby Ward. I'm happy to meet with you all. Thank you. I am a Choctaw freedman, and I live in the Cherokee homeland here in so-called East Tennessee. And I'm originally from Wichita, Kansas. That's where I was raised, where my mother was raised. And I'm a freedman through my mom. And her family is from Muskogee, Oklahoma. And before that, they lived in Atoka, which is a Choctaw, as a part of the Choctaw Nation. And so with that, my family has always been aware of our Native connections, and some family members knew more than others, but my mother and her first cousins knew their grandmother, a woman by the name of Ernestine McCoy, who was an original Dawes enrollee, so she was born in 1898 within the Choctaw Nation, the Pushmataha District, and she died in 1989 when I was a young girl. And she kept her Dawes allotment certificate. She was enrolled as a Choctaw freedman when she was a young girl. And all the Choctaw freedmen received 40 acres of land under the tree. And she kept that certificate in the family Bible. And so this is something that remained in the family. So we still have this family Bible. We still have the certificate. And then another part of my family history that's related to all of this, my family descends from a man named Wallace Willis, who's credited as the creator of various Negro spirituals, such as Silhouetted Jesus. And in 2011, the state of Oklahoma actually designated a song credited to him and another relative as the state gospel song. And we're very proud of this history. And with Wallace Willis, he was actually enslaved within both the Choctaw and Chickasaw nations before emancipation in 1866. And so this is a part of the context of his background. So, yeah, I knew about this in part as a child, and then as I grew up, I just came to study more and more on my own, and I share stories with other people in my family and within the Freedman community.
And so, Shelby, understanding your own lineage and then thinking of connections to the Choctaw Nation, can you describe for us a little bit of how this came to be, where, I guess, kind of the history side of this, of where in the treaty the freedmen were included, and then later on they weren't? Give me a little bit of that history, please.
Yes. So I can give a background on this, and I think I need to go back into the 19th century here. Within the Choctaw Nation, people of African descent were kept as slaves under a chattel slavery system, and this was practiced and legal formally. So this was within the laws of the nation before and after removal. And the Choctaws lived in the southeastern, what we call the southeastern part of the United States before 1830. And upon the Treaty of Dancing Rabbit Creek, the United States forced them out of their homelands. And so their enslaved persons came with them on the in the removals that happened in the 1830s. And in the new homeland, in Indian territory, as it is so called, leadership continued to build this legal framework that advanced and sanctioned slavery. And so you had black codes that were passed by the Choctaw Nation General Council. And so, for example, enslaved persons could not own property or firearms. And it was also illegal for free Choctaws to, quote, publicly take up with, unquote, enslaved persons. And there were tiers of fines, and so folks were, or penalties, I should say, so folks could be fined, or they could get lashes on their bare back, and then, of course, separated from their enslaved partner if they, you know, took up with an enslaved person. And abolition itself, quote, was unlawful, and people could be convicted of it and kicked out of the nation if they, say, taught enslaved persons how to read, write, or sing in meeting spaces without permission of the owner. So this is a legal landscape that exists within the nation in the 1830s, 1840s, up into the American Civil War. And the Choctaw Nation, along with the other four tribes of the five tribes, the five, the so-called five civilized tribes, sided with the Confederacy. And as we all know, the Confederacy suffered an ultimate military loss during the Civil War. And so the United States wanted to negotiate new treaties with the tribes. And there are different treaties, and they vary in different ways. And so I'll talk about the Treaty of 1866 as it pertains to the Choctaw and Chickasaw nations. And so for those two nations, there was a joint treaty for various reasons. That those two nations have a very close relationship. So within that treaty, which was signed in 1866, slavery was abolished, as well as involuntary servitude, you know, for the most part. And the treaty also provided civil rights to the informally enslaved persons, like the right to make contracts, have equal protection of laws, and to be competent witnesses. And under Article 3, that's where there are specifics about this question of citizenship, right? So under that particular article, the United States was to hold $300,000 in trust with interest for both of the nations, one-fourth to the Chickasaws and then three-fourths to the Choctaw Nation, until they passed legislation that would adopt the freedmen as citizens. And there's more details to all of this, but that was the framework. So this is in 1866, but unfortunately, the Choctaw Nation drags its feet. But let's fast forward to 1883. The Choctaw Nation does adopt freedmen as citizens within the nation. And this is involved with the process involving Congress, actually. So the Choctaw Nation passes laws, and Congress looks over things, and they come to an agreement. And this citizenship for the so-called freedmen, the people that were formerly enslaved or people of African descent within the tribe, is based on the treaty, not blood quantum. And after this happened, Congress appropriated the remainder of that $300,000 fund to the Choctaw Nation. So this is the exchange that happens because that is done. So now we're approaching the 20th century, and we have the Dawes process, which we could talk more about later if people are interested. But with that, you have what will become the groundwork for the state of Oklahoma, and freedmen are enrolled, as well as other tribal members, and they are put on a particular section of the Dawes rolls, the freedmen section, many of them. And this happens at the turn of the century. And then in 1907, you have statehood, which unfortunately, you know, creates a disruption in tribal governance within the state of Oklahoma. But over time, there are ups and downs, but you have the reassertion of the nation. So in 1983, the Choctaw Nation creates a new constitution. And within this constitution, citizenship is limited to those that were listed on the by blood section of the Dawes roll, not including the freedmen who were still members of the tribal community who were citizens when the Dawes
roll. Sure. And Shelby, we got to put a pause on that. We got to go to break, but I want you to pick up right when we come back. You can join us too. Phone lines are open, 1-800-99-NATIVE. Tribes are among the leading entities cleaning up rivers, restoring wetlands, and using traditional methods to revive land compromised by pollution and mismanagement. We'll highlight some recent tribal ecological restoration projects on the next Native America Calling. We hope you'll make plans to join us.
Program support from AmeriCorps. AmeriCorps members who serve in VISTA make a difference in the fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining valuable skills. Rewarding service opportunities are available across America, focusing on economic opportunity, healthy futures, education, and more. It will change your life and the lives of others. Information at AmeriCorps.gov/VISTA.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and we are talking about the Choctaw Freedmen issue today. Choctaw citizens owned slaves in the past, and the descendants of those slaves say they should be enrolled. The number to join us is 1-800-996-2848. And with us on the line today is Shelby Ward. She is a co-founder of the Oklahoma Freedmen Collective. Our pleasure to have her here. And Shelby, you were in the 80s giving us a bit of a history lesson. Go ahead and pick up from there.
Yes. And so we're almost at the present. So we're bringing it into the century. So the Choctaw Nation created a new constitution in 1983. And with this constitutional process, it involved the Department of the Interior. And there were there was an election about the constitution, and it was approved. And as I mentioned before, under the terms of this constitution, only folks that can trace their ancestry to someone who was listed on the by blood section of the Dawes roll is eligible for membership within the tribe. And so this effectively excludes folks that only have ancestors that are on the freedmen section of the rolls. And so that goes against the Treaty of 1866 and then also the language within the legislation that the Choctaw Nation passed in the 1830s that ensured that freedmen and their descendants would have rights, privileges, immunities, including suffrage within the tribe. And so since the 80s, folks have been organizing within the Choctaw freedmen community and then also intertribally in working together. And so today, freedmen are still excluded and we're, you know, at the current moment.
And so, Shelby, up until the 80s, what were some of the things that Choctaw freedmen were able to do as, I guess, citizens of the Choctaw Nation? And is that right to say that, citizens of the Choctaw Nation up until the 80s?
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting question. I know that Ms. Marilyn might be able to speak to some of this because with the history of freedmen, it's also a part of the history of Oklahoma. And people in Oklahoma, because at this time you had, in 1907, the first piece of legislation that the Oklahoma legislature passed was one of segregation to separate the races. And so you have this Jim Crow racialized legal framework within the system, which erases or, you know, puts aside indigenousness. And so you have freedmen that are categorized as Black. Within the state of Oklahoma. And so over decades, even folks that are aware of their tribal connections in terms of how they live their lives and how they're treated in the state, there is some misremembering that happens. So that's one thing. And then also you have freedmen that move away. So people move to California, people move from Kansas City. And so I think that folks that are aware of maybe how some of this happened are older folks that remained on their allotments that were able to keep them, and then also people that do history and genealogy research. And so I would be remiss, of course, by not mentioning Angela Walton Raji and the work that she did and continues to do. And she was working on things in the 1980s. And so just a remembering that needs to occur. So I would say that that was an important part of the work in this story.
Well, thank you for that. Let's go ahead and bring in Marilyn Bann, who's also here with us today, joins us out of Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. She is the president of the Descendants of Freedmen of the Five Civilized Tribes Association, and she is a citizen of the Cherokee Nation. Marilyn, thank you for joining us for another Native America Calling. Welcome, and we'll turn it to you. Anything else you'd like to add about some of the history Shelby has shared?
Yes, just to make this more personal, I myself am descended from a Choctaw freedman, Dawes enrolled person, a man named Levi Johnson, who at the time of the Dawes enrollment was living in the Chickasaw Nation with his wife, who is registered as a Chickasaw freedman. Now, Mr. Batten, his opinion that any kind of economic hardships or that are being faced by Choctaw freedmen descendants today is a fault of the United States. The history really doesn't bear that out. First of all, the Choctaw Nation, they made a decision to have chattel slavery, a slave-based economy, to make it almost impossible for a person of African descent to be free and live in the Choctaw Nation prior to the Civil War. You had some free blacks living in the Cherokee, your Cherokee, your Seminole, your Creek nations prior to the Civil War, although there was discrimination against those people, even if they were recognized citizens of the tribe. Also, the Choctaws, as well as the Chickasaws, they negotiated in the treaty that the freedmen allotments could be limited to 40 acres. Now, everyone else, every other type of citizen or class of citizen in the Choctaw Nation at the time of the Dawes enrollment received 320 acres of land. So the Choctaw freedmen are already having economic loss right then when you consider the fact that an intermarried white citizen who was married to a Choctaw Indian woman for a year or a couple of years would get 320 acres of land. So, you know, again, the freedmen of the Choctaw Nation as citizens were already coming out behind. And then, of course, you have the Oklahoma Jim Crow laws that you have your black citizens of the Choctaw Nation. They're fighting. They're fighting to barely survive in Oklahoma. And I don't think the tribal leaders of the Choctaw Nation really fought for the rights of the their black tribal members. And maybe there really wasn't anything that the tribal leadership could have done at that time to stop the Jim Crow laws. But I don't, you know, when you look at history, it doesn't look like there's a whole lot. I don't really see a whole lot that was done or any kind of efforts that were done by the tribal leadership. So then, of course, you know, and yes, we get it. The blacks over here, a lot of people didn't want to associate with their so-called social inferiors. But we come into the 1980s. Part of the reason that we even got the Principal Chiefs Act that really allowed the five tribes to start operating again as tribal governments, exercising sovereignty, was because of your mainstream civil rights acts and laws, where it's kind of like, well, wait a minute here. It's wrong to discrimination and take rights away from people of color. So, you know, you didn't get the Principal Chiefs Act and your and different laws that came in and acts of Congress that made it easier for tribal governments. All of this happened again, not in the 1940s or the 30s, but again in the 1970s, right after your Civil Rights Act of 1964. So this idea, well, this is the United States' fault. No. The Choctaw Nation, on their own, they made a decision, again, to do the things that they did in the 19th century, and then in the 20th century, to take away the rights of the Choctaw freedmen. They didn't get to participate. The Choctaw freedmen didn't get to vote on this Constitution. The Choctaw Nation has tried to rewrite history, rewrite the freedmen out. Here we are. Again, because of racism that did happen within the tribe, outside of the tribe, after Oklahoma statehood, yes, a lot of Choctaw freedmen people, they left Oklahoma, they left the nation, because there were better economic opportunities in places like Kansas or California. There was more distance between the tribe and the people, especially the younger people. But the Choctaw Nation, if they had not disenrolled the freedmen, you would have had more, as Oklahoma became a better place to live, you would have had more people coming back to the tribe. And certainly you have some Choctaw freedmen people who have never left Oklahoma, who have never left the Choctaw Nation. They've continued to live there in southeastern Oklahoma.
Well, thank you for that. And, you know, there's a lot involved in all of this. And I really wish we had a Choctaw tribal member on, too, to also share some of their views on this. I do want to remind folks that we did reach out to Choctaw Nation Chief Gary Batten to be on the program today, but was not able to because of conflicts in schedule. But maybe there are some people who are listening now. If you want to share some thoughts, member of the Choctaw Nation, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. I do want to take some phone calls. Again, if you want to join us, phone lines are open now. The number one more time, 1-800-996-2848. With us on the line out of Santee, Nebraska is Melvin. He's tuned in to KZYK. Melvin, thank you for giving us a ring. You're on air.
Yes, good morning. You know, several weeks ago there was a discussion about these freedmen and black Indians. You know, when the I'm a treaty man for our tribe, and we have to go by what the treaty says. We can't change the treaty by going to the Department of Interior and saying, we don't like this part, let's change it. We can't do that because treaty is law of the land. And that I believe that the Choctaw and the Cherokee need to stick with the original treaty because that is the law. And the other issue I have is, here we are talking about black Indians again. We never talk about the Europeans and the problems they brought to the tribes. It seems like we continuously talk about blacks. And at some time, we need to talk about the European influence in those tribes, too.
All right, Melvin, thank you for your call there out of Santee. We've got another call coming to us out of Wichita, Kansas. We have Larry, who's tuned in online. Larry, thank you for giving us a ring. You're on air.
Thank you very much. I have a question I'd like to ask Shelby, if you could, please. Do you think the Biden administration is going to make a difference in assisting the issues that are on plate right now with the time for lessons? Because I'm not sure if the previous administration was able to do anything. What kind of confidence do you have in the Biden administration for them to do the things that need to be done for this situation?
All right. Larry, thank you for asking. And again, Melvin, thank you for your call. Shelby, I turn it to you. Go ahead.
Yes. So I guess a few things. I guess I can speak to some of the racial elements here. I think this is a very fascinating discussion, or the implications of all of this within the five tribes, the so-called five civilized tribes, because I think a lot of conversations that happen in the public space in Indian country and the so-called United States are on maybe just racial binary. So maybe talking about like red and white or white and black. But in our context here, we're talking about attitudes that were rooted or came from European settlers and then mixing with indigenous ideas and then like the role of people of African descent. And so I think that there's an opportunity for people to learn and to, challenge some of the notions that they might have. But we definitely shouldn't ignore the role of whiteness in all of this and how it is a part of it. And that's why the five tribes were called the five civilized tribes, because they were acculturated to European ideas about race and hierarchy. And it's still influencing the dynamics that we have here and even within the legal structure. I have that comment about some of the racial elements here. And in terms of the Biden administration, this is fascinating, I think just some very big knowledge gaps that key decision makers have. And so I think a part of the work is still people growing in knowledge and, you know, being willing to listen and to having discourses like these. And so I guess I would say there's so many things that are possible, especially since what we're talking about is rooted in treaties. And treaties are still law, as we've seen recently with the McGirt decision. And these treaties of 1866, the Treaty of 1866 between the United States and the Chickasaw and Choctaw Nations still matters. So that's what I have to say in regards to that question.
And so, Shelby, are the Choctaw freedmen saying honor the treaty, include us? Is that what this kind of goes down to?
Yes, I would definitely say that is a part of the call. We are a unique group of people in terms of our rights being a part of the treaty process. And unfortunately, as Ms. Marilyn mentioned, when the treaties were negotiated, some of our rights were diminished because you had people at the table Principal Chief Peter Pinchlin, who was a former chief in the Choctaw Nation in the 19th century, was also a slaveholder, very adamant. And so some of the leading men an influence of the nations had very anti-freedmen or African people of African descent attitudes. But we still, you know, have these. And so, yes, freedmen would want to see treaties honored in this case, as well as, you know, writ large.
And so, you know, we talk about treaties. Melvin, thank you for calling in, too. And, you know, a lot of times we do talk about the power of treaties and how they are not being honored. And in this discussion, what do you think about treaties and what they hold? What should they be dictating and how things should be? If you want to share some thoughts, go ahead and give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And we are talking about Choctaw freedmen today, but it also opens up the discussion to freedmen from other tribes. On the line with us, too, is Marilyn Van, who is connected to the Cherokee freedmen. If you want to share some thoughts, got any questions or any thoughts for our guest today, go ahead and dial in. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And we look forward to your thoughts, your question, maybe even hearing a little bit about your own family history. Do you connect directly to the freedmen issue, especially in the Choctaw Nation, which we're focusing in on today? We'd like to hear from you. Go ahead and dial in. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And again, back to that question about treaties. What do you think about this issue and how it is tied to treaties? And any thoughts about people in Congress who are also weighing in on this? What do you think about that? Do they have a role in a say and having a say in what happens in our tribes when it comes to enrollment? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Go ahead and dial in now. We'll keep the phone lines open. We're ready to hear from you. Again, the number, 1-800-996-2848 is the number.
Support for journalism that raises the awareness of child well-being to citizens and to policymakers provided by the Annie E. Casey Foundation, building a brighter future for children, families, and communities. Information at aecf.org.
Support by Navajo Language Renaissance, presenting Rosetta Stone Navajo for iPads, iPhones, Chromebooks, and Android devices with 2 learning levels and a self-correcting pronunciation feature. Info at NavajoRenaissance.org.
Thanks for tuning in to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, and there is still time to join our conversation about Choctaw freedmen. The number to get you in is 1-800-996-2848. With us today, out of Lenore City, Tennessee, is Shelby Ward. She is a co-founder of the Oklahoma Freedmen Collective and the Tennessee representative for the descendants of freedmen of the 5 Civilized Tribe Association, and she is a Choctaw freedman. Shelby, great to have you here. Also, too, on the line out of Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, is Marilyn Van, and she is a president of the descendants of the freedmen of the 5 Civilized Tribes Association, and she is a citizen of the Cherokee Nation. Marilyn, thank you for being with us as well. And Shelby, I do want to turn back to Congress's involvement. Tell us a little bit about how that's being woven in into all of this. I guess the current involvement.
So I was going to mention some historic things, and I know that Ms. Marilyn can probably add some more color here. So it's my understanding that there are some pieces of legislation that would authorize funds, and there would be limitations on those if there are certain commitments to freedmen descendants that are not honored. And so I don't have any other, specifics to add to that. So, Ms. Marilyn, did you want to maybe add some more detail?
Sure. Marilyn, I turn to you. Go ahead.
Okay. The proposed legislation, additions to proposed legislation never was going to force the Choctaw Nation to add any person as a citizen to the tribe. First of all, I want to mention, these are not funds of the Choctaw Nation we're talking about. These are the taxpayer funds this housing money is the item, the area that's being talked about, the issue. The all of the tribes, or they're almost all federal tribes, are able to run housing programs or other kinds of programs. And the federal government, they give them some funds, but there are limitations. They may be dealing with income or you know, the funds being used only in the tribal reservation or tribal service area. So when this money comes to the United States, it's understood that there are strings tied to it, and not just housing programs, but any other program, whether it's educational funds or the like. And so it's so that's the first thing that needs to come out there. The money that, again, this housing money that we're talking about, what the idea was is that if these funds are available, become available to, say, the Choctaw Nation, then the freedmen have to be able to participate in these funds, or the freedmen descendants, I should say. Now, of course, the Choctaw Nation has the right not to use these funds. They don't have to operate a housing program at all. So, but there is no bill. There's no bill out there, or one that's being proposed by anyone, that says, okay, Choctaw Freedmen or Choctaw Nation, you have to adopt these 10 people or these 20 people, or I don't want to say adopt, you know, register them as tribal members, because the people that we're talking about, their ancestors were already adopted into the tribe. They were all, and the fact that they appear on the Dawes rolls of the Choctaw Nation proves that they were tribal members. This is, you know, that's not in question. So anyone who says that the Congress, or that there are members of Congress that are trying to force them to register freedmen in the tribes, no, they're not being forced to. What is being proposed are additional requirements if they want to receive this federal funding. This is similar to what was happening in the Cherokee Nation several years ago. There was a part of a housing bill where the tribe, if they now they, we're talking about, there were already some Cherokee freedmen who were recognized as members of the tribe already, although there was a moratorium put on by the tribe to add additional. In adding additional Cherokee freedmen tribal members. But the writer basically said that, you know, during this litigation period, the tribe would, if the freedmen were removed, the tribe would not be able to receive this housing money, or the funds would be frozen. So, the tribe could continue to operate as a federal tribe without this housing money, if they so chose. I think that's important to get out to people. Because, yes, the Cherokee Nation or the Choctaw Nation or any tribe out there, yes, they are in charge of their enrollment to an extent. But when the Choctaw Nation, when they wanted to reestablish the government-to-government relationship with the United States, they waive some sovereignty in order to have that relationship with the United States again. They agreed to end slavery. They agreed later on to adopt the freedmen. They received the funds from the United States for adopting the freedmen, that money plus interest. And so now they have the money. So what do? They kick the freedmen out. I have a problem with that. And I also want to bring out the fact that just about every society out there that has enslaved or colonialized people, they have included them eventually as citizens. So why is the Choctaw Nation different? Other nations, that South Africa and the like, they had to make changes. The British Empire, Romania, the fact that these are not Caucasian people? Is a Choctaw Nation going to get a bye on how it treats the descendants of African slaves, persons that they enslaved, and they agreed that they would treat as their citizens? So,
yeah,
this is, you know, I think it's important to bring some of these points out. And as I said, if you look again at, again, the language that that was being kicked around to be added to bills last year. Granted, it's not out there in the public, and there's not an actual bill that's there right now going through a committee. But if you even, for instance, say, compare this with the language that actually went into a bill in 2008 with the Cherokee Nation, again, the Cherokee Nation was never forced to do anything about its enrollment.
Thank you for that. And Marilyn, I do want you to comment on, you know, how you compare some of this, thinking about where things currently stand with Cherokee freedmen and things that have gone recently in front of the Cherokee Supreme Court. Do want you to pick up on that. I do have a caller I want to go to. We're going to go ahead and say hi to Ian in Atlanta, Georgia, who's tuned in online. Ian, thank you for giving us a ring. Go ahead. You're on air.
Hi, my name's Ian McCann. Marilyn's my cousin. I know Shelby very well. I just wanted to add a little bit of the history surrounding like the treaties of 1866. So I think there's a common misconception when it comes to the freedmen that like we are not a party to the treaties of 1866, and we very much are. And I think that freedmen who are understanding of like tribal sovereignty, like, and that understand our history, we have a great respect for tribal sovereignty and for treaties, because the treaties of 1866 freed our ancestors from slavery. Our ancestors weren't weren't enslaved by American citizens. Indian Territory was not a part of the United States. And so when the Emancipation Proclamation happened, my ancestors in the Chickasaw Nation were still enslaved, and they were freed by the Treaty of 1866 a year after slavery had ended in the United States. So we have great respect for those treaties because they freed our ancestors. But in the Choctaw and the Creek, Seminole and Cherokee Nation, the treaties also stipulated that they and their descendants be given citizenship in perpetuity. And so we also are a party to those treaties. And I think that it's very difficult for us to find a resolve when we are understanding of this and we're understanding of our history. Like Creek freedmen served in the House of Warriors, the House of Kings. The first person of African descent to serve on a Supreme Court on Turtle Island was in the Creek Nation. And now the descendants of those very people can't be citizens. We can't protect our land allotments. There are freedmen who have had land allotments stolen under eminent domain. And our land allotments have never had protection because of our status as freedmen. And that is a way that settlers have used to steal land, because in the Chickasaw Nation, 1/3 of Chickasaw freedmen were involved in a case where they were trying to be transferred to the by blood royal because they had blood ties to the Chickasaw Nation. They had their relatives who were enrolled as Chickasaw citizens come and testify in affidavits that they were related to them, and they were not accepted as citizens. And had they been accepted as citizens, they would have been given a blood quantum, and they would have received 8 times the amount of land that they did receive. And it has definitely impacted our communities that still exist in the reservations in the Chickasaw Nation. So I just want to add that.
Well, I'm glad you did, Ian. Thank you for calling in. Again, if you want to join us, 1-800-996-2848. You can also send us an email, comments@nativeamericacalling.com. And Marilyn, reflect on what has been going on in Cherokee when it comes to these decisions and where you currently see where the Choctaw freemen are now. Go ahead, share.
Okay, I'm not quite understanding the question. Would you repeat that again?
No problem. You know, we understand things are different in the Cherokee Nation. We now can say you are a Cherokee Nation citizen. Things went before the Cherokee Supreme Court, and how does any of this reflect to maybe what could happen at Choctaw?
Okay. Okay, yes. It's true that things are different in the Cherokee Nation for the descendants of freedmen, Cherokee freedmen. Just a quick background, the Cherokee freedmen won a litigation in the District of Columbia federal court in August 2017. That was Cherokee Nation versus Nash and Van, where the tribe had a litigation against some freedmen and also the Department of Interior. That decision was accepted by the tribal court there in 2017, and then it was finalized this year and clarified that freedmen have all rights, including the rights to hold office in the tribe. Irregardless of what the tribal constitution says. Now, it would be great to see this situation in the Choctaw Nation because, again, you have a Southeast tribe that joined the Confederacy that had chattel slavery, protected it. You have agreement to adopt the freedmen, and unlike the Cherokee Nation, you have the taking of federal funds to do so. And I don't think the federal government gave that money to the tribe for the tribe to just turn around a little bit later and say, well, we've changed our minds, ha, 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 you know, U.S. taxpayers. The things can be the same in the Choctaw Nation. If the Choctaw leadership decides that they are going to keep their word, you hear a lot of tribal leaders, talking about what the United States should do. The United States should keep its agreements, its word. You've had the McGirt decision, which came down again in the Creek Nation basically said that rights can't be taken away from the tribes, if there's not an explicit law. The Article 3 of the Creek Treaty was very important to that decision, which the Choctaw Nation is fighting hard to have its status as a reservation. Clarified by court decisions here. Now, with that McGirt decision, it was very clear that the Treaty of 1866 is intact, and Justice Roberts even referred to Article 2, which dealt with, the rights of the Creek freedmen in the Treaty of 1866. That was part of his minority decision. Now, in the Choctaw Nation, it is not legally right. It is not morally right for the Choctaw
Marilyn,
Nation.
I do want to let you know that we got a minute before we have to wrap things up. So go ahead.
Okay. If the U.S. is going to keep its word, the Choctaw Nation is to keep its word to the descendants of Choctaw slaves.
All right. And I appreciate you, Sharon, as well as Shelby Ward. But we do got to wrap things up here. There is more to look into with this. We'll continue covering it. Again, if you didn't get a chance to get into the conversation, but you have something to share, go ahead and reach out. You can find us comments at nativeamericacalling.com. Thank you again to Shelby Ward, as well as Marilyn Van, both from the descendants of freedmen of the Five Civilized Tribes Association. And we are going to do this again tomorrow and hope that you join us. Jump into another conversation connected to our Native Nations, talking about land restoration. Maybe that is something you work directly with. We'll be calling on you to share your knowledge and maybe even some of the history. You can join us tomorrow when we sign live on air, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. I'm Tara Gatewood. Thank you for joining us today here on Native America Calling. We'll meet you here tomorrow. We'll be right back.
Did you know COVID financial relief in the form of forgivable PPP loans is available to small business owners and independent contractors, including artists? DreamSpring has worked with New Mexicans looking to open or expand their business for over 25 years, and now they're helping provide PPP loans. Information, including how to qualify, at dreamspring.org. That's dreamspring.org. DreamSpring supports this program.
Osio, a yella nudana dega, gutla ulskedi, no gu, sina tigesai. Udlana da notic, gohuelo di dodoa, marketplace gutla, and skirti, hiskatu iikohida. Tetla noheta ni yawia, a yella nudana dega, and access diski. Naski yiged stela at healthcare.gov, 1-800-318-2596. He are getta no se Medicare, ala Medicaid una dalga.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.